But when you click on the blogger's website, you do so because you are already a convert. You are not likely to have your prejudices shaken by going to the site that you always go to. So there are problems, not for you, not for the blogger, but for democracy as a whole in selecting the voice you want to hear. It is as if you only tune to Fox News when Ben Nevin was on. A terrible thought. Now, most of the time, you don't want to read about science. This is a recognition that I came to quite early on, that I never, ever heard of anyone who bought a paper to find out what was happening in science. If I wanted people to read about science, I had to make it thrilling, gripping, compelling, interesting, or just teasing. I had to make something. These things matter to you, even though you don't want to know them. They matter to you as a citizen and as a taxpayer and as a voter. And rather gloomily, I noticed that most of the young people that I know don't buy newspapers and don't read them, or they may read them online. So there is no danger that they will be told things they had not explicitly wanted to hear. And I think that's dangerous, not just for the public engagement with science, it's dangerous for the liberal democracy in which we think science should flourish. And on that note, and I will come to an end quite soon, paint for you a nightmare scenario. Against a background of economic crisis, governments begin to restrict public spending. Those publicly funded activities that command active public sympathy and support, that appear constantly in public broadcasts and print media, and are articulated by articulate and vocal defenders, will be the last to feel the economic pinch, because in a democracy, politicians naturally tend to respond to what they perceive as popular support. So, what will follow? Among the first targets for public spending cuts will be those activities that attract no public attention, seek no public understanding, prosecute activities which cannot be translated into layman's language, and generate neither jobs nor wealth for the nation. I don't need to tell you that such activities include basic research in science and advanced technology. Now, what is a scientific organisation going to do when it's faced with cuts? It is going to think about ways to cap. It's going to look at cancelling expensive technological projects. It's going to axe research programmes. It's going to make individuals redundant. And it's going to shut down or reduce departments that are perceived as engaged in non-essential work. Research councils can do this, and they have to do this, but if they've got to make savings, it's not their money. They've been given so much, and they've been told to make it last. So once again, the natural choice is to make economies that can be achieved with the least public outcry. And so some of these cuts are going to affect the communications offices and public outreach programs within research institutions, and this is a step that will generate no publicity at all and make public outcry even less likely at the start of the next round of cuts, because if there is no public interest in the society in science, then in a democracy it will have no defenders. So public engagement turns out to be absolutely vital, not just to science, but to the idea of a democracy. If you do not defend the things that you believe to be important, nobody will listen. If you do not defend them in a gripping, compelling, articulate, vivid, and dynamic way, then no one will listen to you, because why should they? In a democracy, I'm fond of saying this, we, all of us, have an obligation to explain ourselves, because what we do for each other. But unfortunately, there's no obligation to listen in a democracy. You have to make your voice heard by speaking in a manner that commands attention. That's the end of the serious things I was going to say. I will now take part in the discussion and continue telling silly stories until the cows come home or until Sue says I have to stop. Thank you very much.